welcome to another episode of the Streaking the Lawn podcast. I'm back. My name is Pierce. Happy to be here with Caroline as usual. Caroline, how's it going?
Hey, it's good. Welcome back. I'm happy you're here and I don't have to do as much heavy lifting.
Happy to do it. And we have a new entry into the Streaking the Lawn podcast roster. We've got Sayer from streakingthelawn.com. Sayer, how is it going?
Doing great. Happy to join the podcast team for the first time.
Absolutely. 2019, got a lot to talk about, I would say. Bowl game, big win, sweeping the Gamecocks in our basketball football series. And we've got ACC basketball play right around the corner. So let's talk about the big bowl game. I mean, I don't know that I've watched a game start to finish that UVA looked so complete and so dominant might be a stretch, but just that they were executing everything they wanted to do at a pretty darn high level from all four quarters on. Sayer, how hype were you?
It was crazy because just about everything that they wanted to happened. Bronco always emphasizes that Jordan Ellis gets over 100 yards. He got, I think it was 106. Perkins was dynamic as always on the ground through the air. The secondary was the secondary. Even the O-line, I thought, did a pretty good job against an SEE defensive line. So there wasn't really too much to complain about.
Yeah, I think we're going to be hard-pressed to find some negatives.
It was literally like a Hassis Dubois getting a little fancy carrying it fumble away from being close or a missed field goal, but away from being like a perfect game, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, because I think dominate is a fine word for it. There were definitely a couple plays or some times in the game where South Carolina looked like they were finally getting their shit together and like building up some momentum, and Virginia came up with some big stops, whether it was turnover on downs or interceptions. Mm-hmm. That really puts up away, but it was still a matter of getting it done when they needed to. It just was just about a complete game from everybody. Yeah. It was fantastic. Like, I don't even know what to say. Like, it was awesome. I mean, we haven't even talked, like, we did in that Olamide was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was really fun.
I don't think
he
ran the same route twice.
It was really fun to see so many of the seniors have big moments. I mean, that's really what you want in a bowl game, right? Is sending them off well. And most of them, if not all of the major impactful players for the Hoos in their final game, had bright spots. Tim Harris having another interception was awesome. Obviously, Olamide. Thornhill was great with his own interception. I mean, it was just cool, cool to see, cool to celebrate. It was a feel-good moment, which we all know we try and relish.
Yeah, absolutely.
When the opposite moments come, it's
I was joking about it, but I thought about it longer. For those of you listening, when we go to write stories, there's our photo editor that we click on and then search the sport, and it comes up with our, Getty or USA Today photos from the wire. So I started writing here, 12, somewhere in there. I was thinking about it. Every single year that I've written for Streaking the Lawn, which is now going on 7 years, the off season for football, whenever you open it, was just depressing photos. It was Tech celebrating with the Commonwealth Cup. It was the Military Bowl post pictures. So most of it was Tech celebrating with the Commonwealth Cup because there was no bowl game. Yeah, there were no bowl games. And now you open it and it's Olamide with this huge smile on his face holding a trophy. And it's Bronco with his arm around Bryce, for some reason still holding his play card. Holding it in his mouth. Like, I don't know if he realized that he was going to be photographed. But now the play card's all over the internet.
It's a nice contrast from when I first joined to seeing all the basketball pictures, too.
Right, exactly. Like, thank goodness for Tony's AP award, because that filled the one section for the off season. So I was like, at least it's Tony with a huge trophy sitting on a table. But yeah, and that's something that you could just see the excitement and the pure happiness. And these are guys that, like Chris Peace, like he had a great game too, helped with a sack and was just all over the place. He started the new standard moniker, phrase, or whatever you want to call it, hashtag. And these guys, I'm not saying that the guys before them didn't put in time and effort and work, because they absolutely did, and that's the stuff that lays foundation for things like this. But to see guys like Jordan Ellis and Olamide, who were 1 year into their college career when Bronco takes over, and bought in and worked their asses off, and this is, it paid off, and these guys get to celebrate with a win on the way out, and I cannot get over just how fun that is. Winning is fun, y'all. Let's do it more.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a really important win for the Hoos in general because of that program defining or year defining victory over a name brand team, over a SEC team, and in dominant shutout fashion. But also considering that the regular season ended pretty poorly, and obviously we've talked about all the games, but looking back at that last stretch, I mean, that's losses to Pitt, Georgia Tech, and Virginia Tech with a win against Liberty, but you know, I guess that's a minor bright spot. Anyway, my point being, if had they lost this, that would have been losing your last four games against major competition and really derailing some of the momentum. And that's what we're used to seeing. First time we would have seen them win some games early and in the middle of the season and have a lot of hope and then falter in November. So it just does a little bit better of a job of wrapping up a successful season to one that almost everyone would probably say is a success. Certainly the number of wins is something the most optimistic of UVA fans were calling for this many. So how much momentum do you think it takes into next year, particularly considering who's coming back, Sayre?
Yeah, I mean, also just quickly, the flip side to that is, the first thing I thought of was, wow, the last two regular season games were both overtime losses. Imagine if they had gotten to 10 wins, which was so realistic.
Yes.
But, I mean, obviously the announcement that Bryce Hall is returning is just incredible. I think it's 8 defensive starters are coming back.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, amazing because they were solid all year. I think they definitely have the chance to be even better next year. They might, and finally they're not going to be picked last to finish in the coastal but I think for the first time in some time they're definitely going to be some expectations.
I think this is a huge momentum builder, and it's so exciting for all the things that Sayre just said. Bryce Hall coming back is ginormous. When he said that he had made a decision and was going to announce it after the bowl, so it didn't like detract attention or anything, I think a lot of people, including myself, thought like, oh, it must mean he's going. And that's fine because he's outstanding and like, go get that money. That's great. So for him to come back and to have made that decision, and it sounds like they talked to the right folks about it and got good input, and he wants to finish what he started. And that's, this secondary is going to be one of the best in the country. Cause even when you lose a guy like Juan Thornhill, you bring, like, Joey Blunt is right there to step up and make plays. And so it's easy to be excited about that. And you look at what Coach Soto did with 4 linemen available for that game, right? He's going to have 8 at his disposal, including guys like Juwan Briggs coming in, who is just one of the most I'm really excited about what he brings to the team and what he can do, especially in a position of need. And then you look at the guy like Bryce Perkins returning is so exciting and so fun. I think his decision making down the stretch, he just continued, I thought, to get better and more consistent as the season went on. And so that it's hard not to get excited when you couple returning players with incoming class being the best that Broncos had, with a favorable schedule, which sounds weird to say considering there's a road trip to South Bend and Florida State coming to town. But when you look at what the schedule shakes out, what it looks like it could be a really, they could be favored in almost, I think, 10 of the games, which is insane.
Yeah. So,
they're 2-10 just 3 years ago.
I know. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And it's so exciting, and there's still work to be done. And the players and Coach Mendenhall have obviously said that, like, they're not where they want to be yet.
Yeah.
which makes this even more exciting. Right? I don't know.
And I think there's correct cynicism, whether it's right to be cynical, but you know, the cynics who say like bowl games are meaningless. Like in a lot of ways they are.
For sure.
And to a lot of teams, they're completely meaningless because a lot of teams don't show up, you know.
Well, apparently all the SEC teams, they don't lose any games that they were excited for.
Honestly, maybe that's something South Carolina was doing, because again, they weren't doing much of anything. But
talking shit.
UVA was really in a perfect spot to benefit from this bowl game in a bowl because of that added momentum, because of that ability to sort of point at the growth and point at the results are coming, and you know, the win total is increasing every year. I mean, it really is going to be valuable, I think, in the off season to end on a high note, which, like we said, hasn't been the case in a while. So we have a tradition on here, Sarah, to hand out 3 stars like hockey games for the football game. So I know we've rattled off many stars, but why don't we officially let you start things with your first star of the podcast?
Well, I hate to go with the obvious one, but okay. I guess it's got to be Lamide.
12 catches,
100 yards, just really fantastic all year. So consistent. You know, a few games here and there, he had a few less catches, but he was incredible all year.
Absolutely.
Also, capping it off with 3 touchdowns was great, and I think he's an underrated NFL prospect too. I think he's really talented.
Absolutely. You wonder where that speed and size combination fits in professionally, but that's probably something we'll hear about throughout the spring for sure. Caroline, who's getting your star?
There are so many deserving players.
That's true. Anyone you don't pick, it means you don't like them, remember?
It's true, and they're all listening. Yeah.
And their moms are all listening.
Grandmothers, yeah, they're gonna put me on like their bulletin board, the grandmother bulletin board. I am going to go with Tim Harris because yes.
Oh, I'm so mad.
Feel free, you can jump. I will let you add whatever stuff I don't cover that you think.
Go ahead.
You can still have your own star, but I just think the kid was in the program for 6 years. He worked his ass off. And again, none of this is ever to say that other people didn't or whatever. There were so many times that he could have packed it in, wrist injury after other injuries. And, you know, he just worked hard and came back. And he had a battle back for his position against Darius Braddon. And he closed out really, really strong. There were times early in his career where he was a little bit of a liability on the secondary. And to see him, the interception was great, but the play that really stood out to me that I like shouted and scared the dogs in my parents' place was the play right before Juan Thornhill's interception. And he played perfect defense on the South Carolina receiver in the end zone. It would have been a sure touchdown. And he got his hand in there. He was in the right position. He turned his head around and he got that hand up there and knocked it out. And they went to the sideline guy, I think, like, right after that play. And he was like, I was right down there on the field, like, right next to that. And I can't even explain to you, like, how athletic that was. Like, and it just, to me, he sums up just, like, what I love about Virginia football right now. And it's the hard work and the dedication and seeing results. He's just one of the people I could not be happier for in this situation.
Yeah, you stole all mine. No, I just, you know, it's the same thing we always bring up about Tim is I think he's a podcast favorite or Streak the Lawn favorite for sure. Yeah. So awesome to see him end on such a feel good note. But fine, I'll go with I'm gonna go with not a senior, even though we love the seniors. I think we've talked him up, but I'm gonna go with Bryce Perkins just because I really was impressed by some of those throws. I mean, just some jaw-dropping plays.
Alameda's third catch.
Yeah.
Passing catch. I was like, anyway.
Yeah, it was just nice to see confidence executed well in throws. And so when you talk quarterbacking and you want to see some of that gunslinger vibe, but then does that turn into poor decisions, poor throws? And we saw some of that throughout the year. We didn't see any of that really against USC. So hopefully it bodes well for next year.
And I feel like that was kind of one of the biggest developments of the season, was his ability to start throwing the ball. And at the beginning of the year, he's always going to be electric on the ground, but he was always kind of looking to run the ball. And there, really, sure, against Virginia Tech and then in the Belk Bowl too, he just threw the ball a lot better, and he looked like he was more confident out there.
Yeah, absolutely. In the pocket, it looked like there were obviously a couple plays that stuff happens, whatever, throughout the course of a football game. But the O-line, like Sayre mentioned a little bit earlier, gave him just about everything he needed on every play. Like, there were no situations, maybe one or two, where he had to, like, run out and scramble out of the pocket. But he just – there. I love that – that's one of the things I love about some of the pictures from this game. There's, like, him in the pocket, like, stoic, standing up, and the blue-on-blue-on-blue look really – anyway, they're really great pictures, like, pop. And it's just him, like, surveying, like, as Oz is – destroying his, you know, coverage, like running three different routes on the same play to get open for a touchdown. Like, yeah, it was a really, really nice game for him, and I was really happy to see him bounce back after the tough ending to the Tech game too.
Absolutely.
The other person that, just to add one more here, was
yeah, sure, you can have as many stars as you want, Sarah. What?
Jordan Ellis too. You know, I think I said he had 106 yards on the ground. I think he kind of personified this new movement for Virginia football too, because what was he? He got the first number 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
So it was really nice to see him go out on a high note.
Absolutely. And they gave random, him the ball.
Yeah. Which is nice, which ties into what I was going to say, is not a star, but a shout out for Dr. Nye and the play calling. I think across the board, Virginia was extraordinarily prepared for this game, and the offensive scheme and plan that they had going into it was just about perfect, I think. So I think it was a really nice mix of – they were pretty even on rushing and passing, and they kept South Carolina's defense on their toes with some of the looks they gave them. I thought he did a really nice job.
Absolutely. Looking at the box score, only one thing sticks out to me is that Joe Reed only had one catch on the day. So just weird to see a quiet game. But I guess you got the lead, you run the ball, not an Oz is catching everything. Anyway, not a concern, obviously.
Yeah, it's like one of those things, like if Kyle has a really good game and shoots really well in basketball, then you're like, Ty didn't have a lot of points. You're like, well, sometimes you got to go with the hot hand.
Very true. And I guess excellent segue to talking about the basketball team, who's continued to be hot. They're 12-0.
Yes, sir.
Coach is number one somewhere in the AP. Who cares?
They actually fell to number two this week in the coaches' bowl.
Oh, did they?
Which makes no sense.
Shows how much I actually care about polls.
Yeah, people always are like, yeah, but they're this in the coaches' bowl. And I was like,
just
I don't, write about
don't
that
care.
One. I just updated with number one. I was like, oh, by the way. Yeah, four in the AP, which that's fine. Cool.
You sound upset.
No, I'm not at all. Because everyone, like, we've talked endlessly, and Paul and I talked about the schedule. About the non-conference schedule, so there is some doubt, whatever.
Doesn't matter, because we're getting ACC play going.
Exactly. And the thing that's, I have to step back sometimes and say, as a youngin, this is where you have to listen to us olds, because when Pierce and I were in school, we were not this good, and we are not this good consistently. So I think I have definitely taken for granted sometimes, like, I look at it and they're like, there's only four undefeated teams. And yes, the schedule wasn't crazy, but even 5 years ago, 3 years ago, Virginia would have lost one of those or could lose one of those. You know what I mean? Like, they beat everybody that they were supposed to beat handily. Like, there was not, like, and I'm a big pro Michigan. Like, I think they're really, really good. One of the top five teams. They had a 5-point game with Binghamton, who's like a 330 plus on KenPom with 9 minutes left at home.
They've really, at Michigan, I still think Michigan is a good team, but yeah, their recent play has not been what it was.
It's not been convincing, I guess is what it is. Right. So I look at it as like they went on the road to two Power 5 teams and picked up those wins. Mm-hmm. And they – was South Carolina great? No. Maryland, I think that will still hold up to be a pretty quality win at the end of things. Mm-hmm. And then won another, you know, preseason tournament thing, whatever you want to call it, against Wisconsin. Wisconsin has had some weird losses, Western Kentucky being the worst one. But that's a top 20 win. And then it is what it is. Like, going 12-0 is hard. And I kind of have to step back sometimes and tell myself, like, this is a pretty big deal. That's cool. Absolutely. Like, that's not something to take for granted.
That's the problem. People think they can take it for granted. And then step back and realize only three other teams are still.
Yeah, and you're like, well, it's because the schedule's been really easy. Like, yeah, but they took care of everything. They're one of two teams in the country that are top five efficiency on both sides of the ball, or top 10 efficiencies on both sides of the ball, mm-hmm. them and Duke. Like, that's it.
It's good.
And that is not bad. Yeah, exactly. The ACC play is obviously going to tell us a ton. And the beginning of ACC play is going to tell us a shit ton, because they play three top 10 teams in the first five games. And that's – their opening stretch is brutal, because even the two games that aren't against top 10 competition are on the road. Sorry, mm-hmm. Boston College is at home and Clemson is on the road. Clemson on the road is not easy, especially if they win the national.
Yeah.
Is it? That was right. Okay. Okay. So Tech and Florida State. So those two top 10 ones are at home.
Yeah.
And then Duke on the road, Boston College, and Clemson on the road. Not in that order, but that Clemson one's no joke. We, of course, again, are facing them potentially on the Saturday after they win the national championship, which is when they do the parade.
Good timing.
Yeah, so this is the second time in 3 years that would have been the case if they win.
Interesting.
It did not have a huge factor the last time. Virginia won the game, but it's still kind of.
I think it might have been beforehand last time. I could be wrong.
Mm. The parade was.
I did
the
not
morning.
Write this down.
I think the parade was the morning of the game, if I remember correctly.
Gotcha.
And so they were like, basically, we're going to do this parade, and then everybody come to the arena and watch us play number 5 or whatever, number 10 Virginia. I think, if I'm remembering correctly. But anyway, yeah, Florida State is going to be, they're just long and interchangeable.
Yeah, FSU, taking a look at them, they're 12-1. The stats I've seen, like whether it be the ESPN thing or the KPOM thing, really do not give the Seminoles a chance. Which is odd, you know, because they're number 9 in the country,
right?
And they usually play UVA pretty tough. I think, you know, if you wanted to point to why, I don't know, they've given up a lot of points to bad teams. Winthrop isn't bad, but scored 76 on them last night.
Yeah, and that was a close game, too.
North Florida, 71 to UConn. You know, maybe, I don't know. I don't see anything that sticks out as, like, an issue, and that's why, obviously, they're ranked so highly. But
I think they're a little more balanced this year. I want to say, yeah, Terrence Mann leads them in scoring.
I love him so much. I'm sorry.
He averages a little bit more than 13 a game. They've had some solid wins. They beat, what is it? I remember they beat Purdue to save the ACC in the Big Ten Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also randomly lost to a kind of up and down Villanova team.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see.
They opened the season with a dominating 21 point win over Florida, which is a number 16 on KenPom right now. So, like, comparable to Wisconsin when Virginia played them, or where Wisconsin's been. That was jarring, I think, to me when I saw that result. I was like, what? But they've got, they're hard to read. They're always just so long, and they're consistent is what I feel like. Like, their offense and their defense are right in the top 25. they're going to be tough to guard. This might be a game that is really difficult. I don't know. I mean, David Nichols is 6'1". He's their shortest guy, and he's a significant contributor. Like, that's the only guy that really you can put Kihei Clark on in this game. I'm curious to see if they do – honestly, if they do more with Jay Huff, because Tony did play him a lot earlier against Marshall, and he had a pretty good game. But they're going to have to go big a lot because they always have a huge dude, which is Christ –
they always seem
7'4".
I think Kumaje is 7'4". Yeah,
which is absurd. So good luck, Jack.
They have a handful of guys who shoot the three well, including Phil Kofer is recently back playing for him, and right now he's shooting 57% from three. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, he's only taken seven. So that's he's been there for like 10 years. He's like that guy this year.
But Walker, Nichols, and Mann all shoot above 42%. Yeah. So, I mean,
they're only shooting at about a 35% clip so far.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like they're taking a ton of threes a game, which was kind of the case last year. And that's how we got. I remember UVA was down, I want to say 10 points at halftime last year, and it was mostly from three-point shooting.
Gotcha. Yeah. I like us at home, obviously, but this is going to be a huge, huge test. And we're FSU to win. I'm not going to be, like, shocked or, you know, like, I think there's a easy chance to lose this game.
For sure. Yeah. And I think looking at those –
well, they should win.
Looking at those three top 10 games, and we'll talk about each one individually as they come up, whatever. But if they can win two of those, I'm happy. One, if it's Duke, great. But if you, it's just, like you said, it's going to right out the gate. They got to be ready. And I think they are. Like, the guys are extraordinarily comfortable and confident, not like in the cocky way or anything, but like the typical, like,
you can say the cocky way too.
If Kyle continues shooting like he did in the past couple games, it's going to be tough for teams to stop Virginia from scoring. And obviously that sounds like duh, obviously. But I mean, in the sense of, like, if Kyle's shooting like that and you decide to, like, mark him tighter, then you're giving Ty and Dre more space. And they need to go hard in the lane like they have, but also be smart with it, because there's been a few dumb turnovers in the lane in the past couple games. That are only really the nitpicky things that I have, where they've made Ty and Kihei had a couple mistakes in the last game where they kind of got in too far and then either tried something tricky and the other person wasn't ready or got stuck and had to, like, kind of chuck it out and turned it over. Against Florida State, who is so long, like, you have to be able to finish at the rim or hit threes, because they'll get in there and slap the ball away or block it. And there's a lot of trees in there. So draw fouls or get the free throw line, I'm all for it, you know.
Well, we're really going to see, you know, where is Kihei with his hand against a much more capable lineup of guards. And we saw Marshall try and force the issue on that to some success.
Not a ton, but you can tell there's still, and which is totally understandable, he struggles a little bit going to his left still.
Yeah.
So we'll see how Tony handles that.
I think Marshall was actually a really nice test to finish, and obviously Virginia controlled that game.
Really bad.
They were extremely physical, though. Like, when it came to, they were all over the body, like, bringing the ball down the court, like, playing defense. Sure. So while the defense was not good, they did get very handsy at times, where I was like, how is that? Like, both hands on a player. So I think it was a good test in the sense that Virginia had to figure out how to work around that and still – and they obviously did that with ease, seeing as they scored 100 points, which is basically like hell freezing over, and I love it.
To what degree is Kersey stealing that ball and running to the three-point line to jack up a three? Unacceptable.
0%, and here's why. Because you'd see a lot – if you just heard the comments on, like, the ESPN post, whatever, like, everyone's like, this is bad karma. This is why you lose to UMBC. Marshall was pressing the walk-ons with their starter. Sure. down 30, 40 points, whatever, with a minute and a half left.
Sure.
And trying to dunk on the walk-ons, in which case, like, if you're going to be doing that, then you have to deal with the fact that they're going to try and get to 100. Because it wasn't so much as, like, I think that had nothing really to do with Marshall. Like, that shot wasn't, like, we're going to show you. It was, like, we want to get to 100 because that would be cool. Like, it wasn't, and yeah. It would have been the same if it was anyone. So as soon as they decided to keep pressing, especially with the backups and the walk-ons in, mm-hmm. like, you, and their coach made no reference to it. He didn't seem bad. Like, no one, I thought maybe the mobbing him was a little excessive, but it was just kind of a fun thing, I think.
I think a lot of it, you have to, it's based on context.
Yes.
Grant has had these, you know, crazy few weeks. So the fact that it was him and the fact that they were going for 100 points on a night in which Tony was getting his 300th win.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I can understand circumstances where it's not acceptable, but that specific instance, it was fine.
Yeah. Did you hate it, Pierre? Or
No, it didn't bother me. I was delighted, but
writing angry emails to the administration.
I don't think people who think it was bad form are like wrong.
That's fair.
I don't care. it was more funny than bad, which is how I make most of my decisions. So.
Okay, so who do you think is the like most important piece at this point?
The most important player is Ty Jerome, and no one will convince me otherwise.
That kid's a baller, man.
It's crazy to see how much he's progressed since his freshman year too.
Yes.
He's just become the pretty definite leader on this team. Mm-hmm. And I think you could argue, I'd probably say that Kyle, it's more important for him in certain occasions to really get a shot going.
Sure. Yeah.
Ty is fundamental to the team's success.
Yeah.
They
talk about it on Titus and Tate, friends of the program, on their podcast a lot, but I think they are amused by how Dre is the best player, Ty's the most important player, Kyle is the face of the program, you know, when people think UVA, that's Kyle Guy. And that Jack Salt is the X Factor glue guy or whatever they go with the whole roster. Yeah. Which is, I mean, it speaks to a team that plays its roles so, so well. And when they're executing those roles well, they're one of the best teams in the country. And that's what we've seen last year and this year is just really defined responsibilities and it turning into a well-oiled machine. So to speak. I think we're still waiting for the Dre takeover game. There were flashes of that in some, you know, he's had his top scoring games this year for sure, but I don't recall a moment like we saw in plenty of ACC games last year where it was like, ooh, we're on the ropes. And Dre just goes, I got this for a few plays.
Yeah, and I think those will come. There's a weird stuff with like non-con where I think sometimes it's hard to get in a groove because of other guys getting playing time or trying to finish, you know, figure out who's meshing and playing like tinkering with lineups. I have been more impressed with one of the things that I really like about Ty's game, and we knew he was capable of a big shot last year, but I almost trust him and Dre the same amount to go get a big shot when needed. So I like that it's less. Last year, I felt there was so much of when Virginia needed a big shot, you had to go to Dre, and he had to do something really awesome and come up with that, where I feel is more, and I don't even know if that's even accurate, like how stuff played out, but that was kind of the feeling, where I feel is now having other guys that can do that. But having the three of them shooting over 40%, over 42%, really, if you round up for Ty, from three to start the season, and 76% from the free throw line, with Kyle's at 86%, Dre's at 83%. Like, that's huge. And two guys that have really been, I think, outstanding, whether in a quiet way or a more obvious way in the last couple of days has been Diakite. And yeah. And Braxton Key had a really nice last couple games, very quietly, I think.
Yeah.
He's played and shown more of that kind of dynamic thing that as he's getting more comfortable, people are like, oh, yeah, here's what Braxton brings to the mix.
Yeah, I think the some of the role players, so to speak, had important last few games. I mean, you saw Jay Huff, obviously, but also Bobby was he was struggling a little bit there for a little while. And the last few games, I saw him grow in confidence a lot. You know, he had some good rebounds, some good shots. I think guys like that are important, especially when, you know, we talk about it all the time. Virginia has to go to a plan B or their version of a plan B.
Yeah.
They need guys like that to be confident.
Yeah. And those fouls in the front court are going to come. I mean, with the better competition. So it's going to be critical that Momedy plays well and critical that Jay Huff plays, you know, like just a spell for a little bit at the very least. So they got they've had their chance to get that experience. You know, I know Jay hasn't played in everything, but you wonder if the Marshall thing was a checking the lineups, checking the matchups, as Tony always says, or if it really there maybe there was a little like, all right, here's your last tune up before the big boys come. Let's play them a lot and see how it goes.
I thought, yeah, in with Diakite, I talked to him after the game. He. You can see that stuff. Like Coach Bunn always talks about playing continuously.
Yeah.
And you can see him do – like, there was a sequence for Momedy where it was, like, you know, a block into, you know, a three-pointer and came back down and had, like, saved it from out of bounds. Like, just, like, a really, really good sequence where he just knew where he was at all times, knew where his teammates were. And you can see the confidence kind of growing. And they don't really care. I mean, guys probably care on some level about starting or not starting. Mm-hmm. But they always say, like, you know, it doesn't matter. They get the minutes where they get the minutes, and they're happy to contribute. But just the last three games since he's kind of stepped up with Kihei out of the starting lineup, I thought he's been really good. Like, that's what Virginia needs. They need him to do – they need him to be a big piece in order to do fancy stuff this year.
Absolutely.
Fancy stuff. I don't know what fancy stuff.
Yeah, fancy stuff like winning.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. Let's see. So it's Saturday at 3 p.m. In Charlottesville. So we'll hopefully start things off 1-0 in the ACC and go from there. But we'll be back to talk about it regardless next week. So stay tuned to that. Stay tuned to the blog for some more pregame looks at FSU. And until next week, for the rest of us, I'm Pierce. Go Hoos!